Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. It's 6 p.m. This is Sunday, and it's the Sunday show with Jeff Jotel from Saturday Afternoon Post, F. Wayne Johnson from Lines of F. Wayne Johnson, and one Darren, me. I'm just producing. I'm here to join the conversation, and today the conversation, well, I guess we were all pretty well talking about the last thing we were discussing was the screw-up the Boehner made, inviting Netanyahu to address the Congress, while Kerry brought up the fact that even the Mossad is saying that it is an unfeasible, especially pre-election, an unfeasible thing to do.
Right,
and
right.
It's blown up kind of in his face. But doesn't he just generally do that? Isn't that the SOP for John Boehner's office?
He must have got that great idea while in the tanning booth getting oranger and sipping on a beer or a martini. You know, what an absolute idiot.
When I was watching the State of the Union address, I thought, why the hell did he dye his head orange?
Well, no. It's that tanning stuff. I don't know what he must be using, copper tone or something.
Yeah,
he's always got that
spray tan.
Yeah,
they've
called him the Orange Man for years. He's a jerk.
Yeah.
He's an absolute jerk. He's so vain and he's so goofy. And, you know, what a slap in the face. You don't even tell the president. You just go ahead and do it. And, you know, it's just another anti-Obama racist hatred thing that the Republicans are so fond of doing. And, I have my problems with Obama, but for God's sakes, let's talk protocol. What a horrible lack of protocol by John
right.
Boehner and Netanyahu as well.
An unprecedented lack of protocol. Yeah, I'm sorry, Glenn, go ahead.
Well, I can't see how anybody expected anything different. I mean, Netanyahu is just counting the days till Obama's out of office, because no matter who gets in office, next time Israel's back in the seat it's enjoyed almost always. Right now,
mm-hmm.
Israel is not really in a good seat with the presidency here at all. They haven't been since, I guess, the last election. But
because he sided with Romney. But, you know, Obama's not going to let this go unnoticed. He's going to snub Netanyahu, and deservedly so. So, Netanyahu won't be meeting with Obama when he comes over here to talk to Congress. And so Netanyahu's just staging this for a couple of reasons. One, he's anti-Obama. Who cares, you know? But beyond that, it's right before his election, and he's sagging in the polls over there. So he might lose, and I hope he does.
Yeah, well, like I said, Boehner should be chastised. This is totally beyond any proper protocol. He set precedence by doing this, including the end run around the president. You know, Boehner was not elected president. President Obama was.
Right.
And he's got to get dealing with that. If he wants to, you know, basically ass up and do his own thing, then he should be brought to task on it. He needs to be brought in line.
He ought to just get out of the tanning booth altogether. He's lost his mind.
You know what, gentlemen? The Congress of the United States, which I include the Senate in that, has done really nothing to legislate anything of any value to help this country or its citizens in probably 15 years. And
it's been a long time.
It has. It's been a hell of a long time. And people are learning more and more every year, and since social networks got to be so rampant, people are learning more and more at a clip. A huge, fast clip. People are starting to pick up, I can go onto Facebook and see posts that I'll never see in the news, you know. People are waking up to that. And there was a time, Jack, when you and I were doing the show here, and a couple of times in the last couple of years, I would come on and say, today I'm Greek, because of the horrible austerity being imposed by the IMF on the Greek people and how bad it was.
Yes, yeah.
Today, Greece has swept that they have, that they think they've got enough, even in the majority of the parliament, in order to instill a leftist, what they call a leftist agenda, to Greece, that will just say F you to the IMF, which it's like Iceland. I think it says to the world out there and to the ever-growing disparity of poverty versus great wealth held by so few. It says, it says globally, we're coming for you.
Are you listening, right. Paul Ryan? Are you listening, Cameron? Are you listening, Harper? All these idiots that want to inflict austerity on the poor people of the world, of each country, and even in the United States, the Republican Party is hell-bent on an austerity budget. Paul Ryan is very much at the helm of that stuff, and this stuff has got to go out the window. This nonsense of making the rich filthy rich and everybody else having to struggle for little crumbs, that is not right. It's very bad. And thank God the Greeks came to their senses and they rose up overwhelmingly and said, F you guys, this is over with. Good for them. Hats off to them.
Go ahead, Glenn.
Well, just 1 second. I'll let you have it there, Wayne.
Sure.
This party that has the, I think you pronounce it Syriza.
Uh-huh.
Party is a radical left anti-austerity party, and they're rooted in communism, which is their, you know, instead of socialism, it's communism. Uh-huh. But the point is that what they're saying here is that it's a community or people-based political agenda, you know, ostensibly on their bannerhead.
And it was caused by the austerity that was put on them.
Yeah.
Well, Jack, I am a registered Republican for those listening, and Jack, both you and Glenn know this. But I've also always said it's one thing to be pro-corporate, but it's another thing to be an enabler for predatory corporations.
Right.
And henceforth, this is what Greece is trying to overthrow.
Right.
Banking banks have done this, international banking have done this to just about every South American country where they have economically enslaved them through these, basically interest-only payment loans.
Yeah,
like
IMF,
our own housing
they're
industry,
terrible.
Right. That has collapsed, you know, like our housing market at the time, our real estate market of 2008, actually 2007. Mm-hmm. And they're doing the same thing and have been doing everything per country worldwide.
Yeah. It's a nasty, nasty trick that they're playing on the people under the guise of economic stability and jobs and everything else. They impose this drastic, horrible budget that robs the poor, destroys social programs. It guts it all, and it's just not the way to go. It's a horrible way to go. All it does is results in is the rich getting richer, and they're getting richer worldwide all the time. And I'm so glad that the Greeks stood up to it, and good for them. And it'll have repercussions throughout the world. You wait and see. The right wing is going to rise in horror now, or they're going to be caught in just absolute horror. And we'll see what their reaction is to this.
David's in the chat room, and he's saying that, you know, Greece will not leave the EU. Basically, I think that this party has come to its majority strength and winning session here by saying, you know, we will not pay back the IMF this kind of money, and that we're willing to leave the European Union. But you know what? I haven't read every piece on it. I've only read what's been being posted about the election.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of fear over how Greece will be able to come out of this. They're in a financial crisis, and how they're going to do it without keeping the euro as their currency and staying
Well, Gwen, if I can interject here real quick, is right now the status of the middle class is now 25% of the population of Greek is now below the poverty level because
that's horrible.
These economic embellishments that has been asked for them to sign on to.
Mm-hmm.
The devaluation of everything. 25% now is at the poverty level.
Well, you know, Fareed Zakarias has a show on CNN on Sunday called GPS.
Right.
And I only caught a few minutes of it today, but he was exemplifying and pointing out and dichotomizing the difference between the 1% holding all of the wealth. And he projected two-year-by-two-year growth of how much the 1%, how quickly they're gathering the world's finances.
Right.
And right now it's 48%. By 2016, the year of the next presidential election,
be over 50.
Yeah, yeah.
I've heard that.
I was like, whoa.
And I'm glad he, on CNN of all places, was able to make that point. That isn't mentioned in the mainstream media too much, but Tom Hartman's been all over that lately on Free Speech TV, and Amy Goodman, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, and David is saying that Greece will force a compromise now that they're in power. The EU, especially Germany, will accept it instead of Greece leaving. Because if Greece leaves the EU, Germany will lose billions.
Yeah, right.
Right. Well, and I'd have to side again, it's still economics, and I have to agree with David, is they're not going to leave. Germany's going to assimilate, or at least acquiesce some forgiveness and renegotiate what they've bestowed upon Greece to make it more palatable for the working middle class, let's just call it.
And we saw earlier in the year, late last year, France's reaction in electing another socialist prime minister, but also the drastically different agenda that he proposed for the country, heavily taxing the rich rather than letting them get by the way they do here in this country with absolute economic murder. And, you know, there's a tendency right now in Europe that I think is very healthy, and it's going through the whole world, really, South America.
Mm-hmm.
And Latin America, for these governments to go left in favor of measures that are good for the people rather than the billionaires. And I am for it.
Jack, I think you stated on your site there is this Reaganomics trickle-down theory has been a failed experiment that has devastated the working middle class. And that is a true factual statement, and there's not many. We have the facts here to prove from our last three decades, whatever it's been, that is a correct statement.
Yeah, and hopefully the majority of the people will get it in their heads and they'll realize what a terrible experiment it was to begin with and what an absolute failure it's been. The only people that helped are billionaires. That's it. So we've got to get off this kick right away.
Well, you know, the point is who's in the leadership seat, and basically you've got people that are held in the pockets of the banking community globally. Now, the thing
Democrat and Republican in this country.
Well, yeah, and there's no difference much at all between the two. It's just so horribly corrupt. It's incredible. I mean, guys, you just look at it.
Well, too much money in politics. We've talked about it many times. Way too much money in politics. Thank you, Supreme Court.
Citizens United has destroyed the middle class.
Absolutely. Citizens United is it's the epitome of the failed economic policy of Reagan, the Reagan years, and it's pathetic that it's come to fruition in this country thanks to a very, very wrong Supreme Court, extreme court, I call them.
Yeah.
Well, so the world, I mean, it took the citizenry of Iceland to throw their leadership completely under the bus. And it's doing the same thing in Greece right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so the point is that this is starting to work. People in the streets. You know how many people have been in the streets of Greece?
And for how long?
this is beginning to actually work.
Right.
It's because of the unfairness and all of the misery and hardship it's causing. I mean, you know, how long do American leaders think they can get away with this before people and the violence in the streets is out of hand at this point anyways? But as far as the inadequacies of what they get for their, I mean, you know, people are getting afraid of the IRS, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, really afraid of the IRS because they might have medical debt now that can be put into a collection agency that can eventually, through, and I don't remember the intricacies of this argument, but I mean, the imprisonment of people for non-payment of debt.
Yeah, it's horrible.
We're turning
our vulnerable students into literal debt slaves thanks to Fannie Mae and the big Wall Street banks that are just, they're literally preying on students who are not that attuned to economics and stuff. They're vulnerable. They don't have much money. They need to go to school. They need money for school. So they'll sign on the dotted line, and they're signing their lives away, and it's criminal.
Jack, you brought up a very good point, and I'd like to pass this on. Of course, President Obama has proposed that, in essence, the community college, you can get your first 2 years of college basically like an extenuation of high school. You know, it's free.
Right.
You, if you've got the grades and you can attend, do it. And, you know, you do it on basically the county and state government's dime, you know, for your education.
I like that.
Well, I want to pass on. Delaware is already doing that. Some parts in Maryland are already doing that. If you go, if you live in, Caroline County, Talbot County, and Dorchester County, you can go to Chesapeake Community College for free for your first 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
In Delaware, if you can belong to, you can go to any one of their Delaware Technical Community College. Again, after high school, you continue on, you get to go for free.
You know,
I've always said, and on this show, is the best wealth of a nation is its educated workforce.
Absolutely.
And this is the direction we need to go for that.
I'm with you.
I'm listening to a lot of conversation amongst people, too, who are saying that, yeah, it's really wonderful, go to your 2 year college. That's trade school. That's a trade school. What they call an AP degree is it can basically help you to get into 4 year school, but it's not the same degree as bachelor's or master's. I mean,
they're 4 year degrees.
Say, no, wait a minute.
It's an AA degree. It exposes you to philosophy, to history, to all kinds of good things. It's a good start.
I know. I got my 4 year degree and beyond, and then I came back down here, had nothing to do, and went to a community college to take art classes that were in play and stuff. I mean,
good
I'm
going to say, Gwen, let me interject here my own personal experience. I was a non-traditional student. I went off to war, and I started going to school, I think, when I was in my 30s, and companies I was working for always paid for it, but I started out in the community college, and they had two programs there in Salisbury, Warwick Community College, going after my, basically my degree was applied science / electrical engineering. And I could go with just the format of a 2 year degree, or I could go with the more stricter, more demanding math classes and stuff, which was then 100% transferable to the University of Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the route I took. So, you know, don't blow off community colleges being more traditional and stuff.
My nephew actually, he just got his 4 year degree at Elmhurst. He came back down here and he was attending the City College right next to me here, which is a community, but they call it a City College. They're fighting to get a bigger degrees in there, but. What he did was he had to go in and take all the EMT classes in there and for a year. And it's been a year. And he just popped out of there and went over to, he's been accepted right here locally to the fire school. He's going to be a first responder, an EMT on the fire truck.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all from a community college.
Yeah. Yeah.
And after it must be a family tradition, after he got his 4-year degree. But a lot of that's my point though. A lot of people are saying that on the positive up inside of this, a lot of 2-year schools are trade schools that can place people into jobs different industries that like tech mm-hmm. and whatnot. And so that's where
nursing
I'm going
and all that stuff too. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, if you use the 2-year college in that aspect to get your foot in the door with the company, then the company, because they get to write it off on their taxes, then says, okay, if you go with continuing education and you get, a C or better, some will reimburse you 100%, some will based on, the grades you get, the percentage, mm-hmm. That they'll reimburse you. If you get an A, it's 100%. If you get a B, it's 90%, things like that.
Yep.
And so, in other words, but the 2-year college can get a person with enough training into the workforce where then the company picks up the tab for you to continue and finish your education. There's
so
a lot to go that route, too.
On the overall, gentlemen, you're saying here, though, this is really a pretty damn good step for America. For
I would
young
agree.
I say it's a required and needed step for this
yes.
country.
Yeah.
Because you're now competing globally.
Yeah.
And many countries, if you have the intelligence and have the ability, you go to a 4-year college for free. They will
right.
foot the bill. I was just recently here that in England and France, they said, yeah, we want you to pay a little bit. And the students marched in the streets.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, they did. That's absolutely
yep, they did.
Yeah, they did. Right. And they did.
Yep.
So, but that's
and, let's keep in mind the sad fact is that there's about a snowball's chance in hell that this proposition is going to pass within the next 2 years. It won't happen. The Republicans
That's the sad part.
I know, it's just so ridiculous. And the Democrats are bought out, too. And it's just, they're so short-sighted, and they're so busy trying to please their corporate masters, they'll never go for a program like this and have it be publicly funded. They want everything private, and they want the rich to be able to afford it, and that's the only people they care about. So we got to just keep pressing for ideas like this. And adopt the same kind of agenda that Bernie Sanders has advanced recently, too. And there are more and more people starting to realize that the Reaganomics has been an absolute failure, and we got to quit kowtowing and placating the rich because it's doing nobody any good.
Right, exactly.
Well, David...
Yeah, it's going to fail because Obama proposed it. I'm sorry, Glenn, go ahead.
Well, David's saying he thinks that all school loans should revert to paying the balance only. All interest accrued should be canceled. Screw the banks. And I agree with him, but the point is, I think that, people should, state colleges used to give people the full ride. Really,
yeah, California did for years.
Really good schools.
Yeah.
We had kids on scholarship at Cornell that had a full ride. But I hear it's only a dream these days, even with the best of students. And that's
right. Well, why have colleges gone up so much? They've gone up 1,000% since Reaganomics took effect. What is the reason for this? This is ridiculous.
Wait a minute. Just let me finish this one thought, though. You got a good...
All right.
Good. You got a good question, Jack, but I'm going to say that this is going to dampen down the pool of intelligence in youth that will be schooled and educated and come out and give such a great, huge proportion of their lives to the betterment of the community and the planet.
Mm-hmm.
This is what is happening here. All of the worst-case scenarios aren't even being talked about. We are talking about the lack of intelligence in our greater society because of this. And mm-hmm. if people thought about that for a minute, it just...
it's stupefying, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it's a short-sightedness, like I said. The true wealth of a nation is in an educated workforce. By stagnating that, stifling it, even repressing it, all you're doing is you're hurting the whole nation's overall, and i.e. the standard of living for the working middle class.
Well,
that's what you're
doing. Let's go back in history and let's think about this a minute.
Why can't we talk in terms of communities instead of class structures? You know,
well, class structures are very valid and very important, and they're part of it, definitely.
Well, I got to say this. I think that that structure that they're a part of is the very structure we'd like to see fall down and be remodeled.
Oh, absolutely. I'm with you 100% on that.
And
you know, let's talk historically about this. When did the Republicans start to become the anti-education party? Let's think about this. The Republicans supported the Vietnam War big time. And the Democrats wanted to, part of the Democrats began it, or, you know, were at the early helm of it. But they wanted, after a while, the Bobby Kennedy wing and all those people split off and wanted peace. And the Republicans didn't want that. And they didn't like the student deferments because record numbers of students from the late 50s through the mid 60s and early 70s went to college as a result of student deferments. And then
being one of the major parts of that.
Yeah, and then the students saw what was going on in the world, analyzed the country, and realized we were on the wrong track, man. And they started questioning things. And, the Republicans couldn't stand that.
No, and the reason that state colleges today, and David just pointed this out in the chat room, one of the reasons that so many kids don't get their full ride anymore, the majority of the good ones don't, and it's because they were defunded, and they were defunded at the state and national levels by the Republican Party primarily.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's not good for America, my friends. That is not good for any country.
Let me go back and readdress Gwen's statement when talk about more of a community level versus a class level. Well, I would contend that very much of a community level is based on a class level. In other words, you're not going to find middle class in the community of the working middle class in Beverly Hills, let's say, or Malibu.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Right. If you're going to take it in the community aspect, right, this is what I'm saying. I'm talking about backstreet America, downtown, Columbus, Philadelphia, New York, wherever. I am talking about most of your classes, Brooklyn, Long Island stuff. You're still talking working middle class.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'm saying. It is locally neighborhood, working neighborhood-wise, is also class segmented.
Wait a minute, though. When I understand the hierarchy you're presenting there, and I understand what you're saying. I would say this, too. You're using geographical stats to support this. Well, Beverly Hills has how many people voting in it? Say X amount of people voting in it. How many of those people do you think really aren't the working middle class because they live and work in service to that community, in the community?
Yeah, but they don't live in Beverly Hills.
They don't live in
Beverly
Hills.
They live on the outskirts and commute into Beverly Hills.
Right. Good point.
Well,
yep.
And you
want
to talk, with Citizens United, the person in Beverly Hills, by contributing millions of dollars to those that are enabling their 1% growth far above percentage-wise than the rest of the nation, has now more votes, voice of their votes for that.
I would ask you how many of you realize that even gardeners live on people's estates and homes in California.
Oh, that's again the servitude. We have that on the Eastern Shore. You have the caretaker's house, you have the mansion or the estate there on the bay side of the Delmarva Peninsula.
Mm-hmm. And
matter of fact, Harold Baines, the great baseball player. Go ahead. Go ahead,
Ben. The point is that the servants that live at those residences are working middle class people. By income status, by hierarchy status that way. And their numbers often are double what the living or paying community there is. as far as geographically a standard of who's, you know, whose votes are counting where. Am I making any sense here?
Well,
oh, sure.
No, well, I understand what you're saying, but let me put it to you this way. Basically, that is the scenario of serfdom, or the great mansions of the period, like, for instance, Downton Abbey. Okay, you had the wealthy there, but everybody else is basically in servitude to that. That was part of the liberal movement. Liberal was based on the Latin word liberat, which means free man, which means you are no longer economically enslaved or in servitude to the lord and master of the manor. You are now a free man. Whether it was southern slavery or economic enslavement, because if you got fired as one of the servants, the cook, housekeeper, whatever, and you tried to go find another job, the 1% insisted on a recommendation from your former employer, and he says, no, I fired them because I didn't like them, or, you know, they didn't have their shoes shined enough for me to be serving my dinner at night. Then that person cascaded and didn't get hired anywhere, and a lot of times turned into a ward of the state.
You know, I understand what you're talking about with blackballing servants and such, but, you know, I got to say this. I mean, I grew up with servants in the house, and my mom pensioned people off and paid them, you know, a pretty decent salary as well as their room and board. I've known many, many people in my life that this was, and it's not always that kind of relationship of servitude. There is respect between people, too. It just depends
on yeah, sure.
people.
Well, it depends upon the household, really.
Yes.
Well, I was going to say, did you find that to be the standard or the exception?
Actually, in my life...
In the big picture of it.
In the big picture, between states, I mean, I was between New York and Florida, and I got to say, in my life, it was the standard. People were treated well, respected well. But that wasn't every house, you know, on the block, I'm
right.
sure. And I know what you're saying has its valid point.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
blackballing servants, that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's just nasty. And
I agree.
And people often think that folks that have a bank account are nasty people because of the situation as it stands today, and that's simply not true.
No, not always true. That's right.
I was going to say, I'd have to propose this. Jack, would you want to work for Mitt Romney and his wife in that kind of a status?
No, I wouldn't be caught dead in Mitt Romney's house.
That might be you know, extreme example, but that's kind of what the way the perspective of way I look at it from my perspective. And you know, and they are very nice people. Yes, I can know there on the Eastern Shore, we were very Southern traditionalist kind of thing as I was a kid growing up, and it was nothing out of the norm to have the black nanny, cook, housekeeper. Mm-hmm. And but she didn't eat at the table. You know, she was able to eat in the kitchen. She could have some of the food.
Yeah.
But she wasn't allowed to eat with the family. You know, that Southern traditionalist, you know, the invisible wall.
You know, guys, that happens, especially in fiction. But it's like, would you object, Jack, to working for a guy like Ted Kennedy?
No, again, like I say, it depends on the individual household and the mores and the morals of the people involved and the people you're around. I'd love to work in Ted Kennedy's house. I'm sure we would have gotten along just fine.
But see, what I'm coming to here is you guys are talking about taste, about class.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And that's where I think words are so powerful, because personally, I like to talk about community instead of. But my only point here is we don't have to talk about it. What I'm saying is that words have power, and so using words like community instead of class structure to get it away from, you know, like we're having an argument about the Republicans who are anti-community, you know?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
instead of upper class assholes, which most of them aren't anyway. But the point is, that's what they're want you to believe in them, you know. But
I will have to concede to you, all of our ideas, our concepts, what we project forward to, moving forward to, should be based on a community. If it's good or good, not good for the community,
will
the community benefit or will it be devalued? You know, because of it. Like,
and
I
think
fought,
when you're suggesting too that we cut across class lines on, and we can very easily on certain issues, and that's a good way of creating community and creating commonness and creating camaraderie, which is should be followed at all in all cases. As a matter of fact, I saw Kashama Sawant addressing a group of minorities in the city of Seattle. It was done just before the holidays, and I saw it just today on Free Speech, and she made the point that the best thing is the worst thing to do is for people of like mind to fight amongst each other over petty things. And I've said this for years. The best thing is for people to unite around one or two specific common issues and go big time on them and get them passed and get the public consciousness behind them and in agreement with them and get it passed. And I think that's how she was successful in passing a $15 an hour minimum wage in the city of Seattle. And that's a good lesson for everybody.
No doubt. I agree with you 100%, Jack. And I think that the more we can compromise with things like hierarchies and just find it, this is where Occupy was correct, you know, that horizontal leadership kind of thing. Everybody's equality in the group, no matter, you know, who was, you know, I'm sure there were people who brought more to Occupy as far as materialistically than others, but, you know,
that's
the hot seat.
Well, and the thing is when we speak community, we can also be speaking about the full spectrum of economic stratifications. I know, well, for instance, I'll give you a good, perfect example. Last man's name is Wexner. I forget his first name. But basically, you would know him as the Limited and then Victoria's Secret. He's home-based right here in Columbus, Ohio. That man is so philanthropic to the College of Ohio State, which he graduated from. But not only that, but the neighborhoods, the other surrounding small burbs to Columbus.
He's a good man.
His philanthropic fingerprint is all over this region of Columbus. So, you know, for that, I give him kudos and a shout-out. Mr. Wexner, a fantastic man.
There are plenty of people who own the company in the town. There are plenty of people who own a larger in every industry out there. I mean, there's people in the fashion industry. It's been a big week for that. Who are extraordinary people to work for.
Well, just because somebody makes a lot of money doesn't make them necessarily evil or bad or undesirable in our eyes. And I want to make this point because I learned today, I was astounded to learn that the city of Seattle pays their city council members $120,000 per year. That's quite up there, you know. And I learned that further amazing, not so amazingly, Kashama Sawant gets that salary, and she donates 2/3 of that salary to oppressed people, minorities, and causes that will aid regular people. And my hat is off to her bigger than it ever was before now as a result of that.
And to elaborate on that line, let's go back. Did you know because of the wealth of JFK, you know, Jack Kennedy, he did not accept any paycheck his whole term as a president?
Exactly. They donated it all to charity. That's right. I remember that.
Yeah,
right.
But
he never drew a paycheck.
Right.
Here's the paradox in all of this. I mean, if not even the paradox. Here's where it all goes south. It all goes south with 80 billionaires on this planet who are greedy, horacious bastards.
Oh, yeah.
Who, have only, and these bastards are male and female. And sometimes there's people I might put in that bastard league who a lot of people, even in my own community, would go, oh, no. Yeah, because they're not being responsible with their money. They're gouging the planet for profits. And worst of all, they're decimating communities in so
many ways.
They're
exploiting their labor force. They're destroying the environment. They're doing all kinds of bad things in procuring and maintaining their wealthy status. It's horrible. I you know, we're in complete agreement on that, Gwen. There's no doubt about that.
David just hit the nail on the head here. He said there's a big difference between the upper middle class, who's 0.01%, and those of the 0.01% that has wealth beyond imagination. He's quite right. He is quite right. You know, there are people, some folks will sit on their cash reserves are huge, huge, absolutely huge. What happens if all that electronic cash goes south? I keep wondering. But that's another
exactly. That's why they have panics when the recessions hit, you know.
The mouth from the south. Ted
Turner?
On CNN. Ted Turner,
yeah.
Barbara Walters was interviewing him, and she says, well, you've got all this money. I said, what's your biggest thing? He says, losing it all. He said, but all this money? He says, look, this is all, you know, pretend money, you know, in the market and stuff. So it could go south like that.
Right.
I could lose it all just like that if the market crashed.
Yeah.
Well, they own the land. They own the land. They own the industry. They run both. Mm-hmm. They run both, and they've got the politicians in their pockets in several countries. Just see what's going on in Argentina. Now we're back assassinating the competition.
You've heard me speak what I saw firsthand in Argentina. And, of course, you know, the U.S. government, the Navy sent me down there to help prop them up. And by the time I got home from all of my tours of South America, being Chile and stuff, I came back home with the mindset that I didn't do those people any favors at all.
Right, yeah, yeah.
You know, I was going to interject that David's saying that for a Coke or an Adelson to contribute $100 million to anything is nothing. It's everything to a state school like Florida, where the Coke runs have instituted, and that's that dampening down of the intelligence of the community that's going on in the youth.
Oh, propaganda.
Yes, and our way or the highway. But, what's really the scariest focus of all of this is that, and David was saying, we're talking about the upper middle class versus the 0.1% billionaires. The upper middle class is filled with many good people, creating good green industry, good industry, lives with and works for the community. I know. But they have nothing. They have less and less that they can do to tide back the awfulness that is coming from this growing wealth distribution to the 1% and the lack to the rest of the planet. We're talking on a global reach.
It's a global scale, no doubt about it. Yeah, it's happening everywhere. And then you wonder why people like Chavez come to power in Venezuela, and like Morales in Bolivia, and these things are going to happen as long as there's excess from the far right and the highest strata of the economic circle. There's going to be a reaction, there will be a reaction that will not always go the way the wealthy want it to go, and they cause their own problems with speculation on Wall Street and in the financial markets that endanger people's economic security. It's going to happen. So these guys had just better tuck their necks in and do it right.
I was going to say, Jack, the perfect example is the collapse of the whole worldwide economy in 2007 from the abuses of this segment we're referring to.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, I was looking for Carl Sandburg did a poem called Company Town, and I was looking at to be able to read it here. I'm looking through my notes here, and it's not coming up. But basically, I would highly recommend many to check that out. It's a little short poem, not more than, you know, half a dozen lines. But the closing thing is, you know, you live life as the company tells you fit that you should be leading it.
Right.
And when you get that kind of, go ahead.
We've got a global Hatfield and McCoy's about to really, you know, we've been watching it from country to country come up, from Tahrir Square to Occupy to people in the streets of Spain. How long do you think it's going to be before the austerity measures in Spain are taken to the same degree as Greece?
Oh, now that Greece has erupted, it's going to happen any time now, I bet.
It could very easily become a domino effect.
And the thing that
I hope it does.
David is saying, the thing that David is saying right now about political action groups that the Copes have, like Americans for Prosperity, they have 407 million in their PAC. They buy the government. But here's the thing. I really do think that independent media like this, these little shows, one or two people listens and spreads stuff, other shows, the indie media, the social networks, people are getting woken up to the fact that the news they're listening to is dictated to them.
It's all corporate.
It's basically driving them. And one of the groups that's waking up very quickly and it's rolling around with is the youth industry, because that's the target market for so much, you know, commercialism. These kids are waking up to a lot of things.
I pass this on. Jack and I both have a mutual friend. His blog site's called The Brain Police, which is a line from a Frank Zappa song. He's over in the Bordeaux region of France. Microdot is the name it goes by. But on his posting there, France is now suing Fox News. France has a freedom of speech. But if you're on news and you say, you know, this is the facts, you better be right. If you're wrong, if it's made up, like they had their no... Fox News said that they had Muslims were so influential that there was no go zones in there, that French people could not go in these areas because the Muslims controlled it. Of course, he came on the Fox News. Sean Hannity repeated those facts, and then once those two had on there, then all the talk radio over here came out and cited that as a reference, as if it were factual. In France, they said, "This is bullshit. You made it up. You're lying. Yep. Now we're taking you to court."
Never insult a Frenchman and offend his dignity. He will hound you to death. So good for the people of Paris to raise hell.
Exactly.
Is there any wonder why there's such a huge battle for, you know, internet control?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Well, of course, greed.
This is where people can find out what's truly going on.
Yeah, the forces of greed want to shut it down or taint it in such a way that people will find out what they want them to find out, which is not the truth.
I think the cat's already out of the bag, to tell you the truth. People might be able to pinpoint and start, you know, clamping on certain things. But the truth is that there is so much wealth in all the money is in the internet. It really is, more and more. I mean, do you know how much people buy online, even to go to Home Depot and just pick up?
Oh, yeah.
You're right.
The commercial aspect, the commerce of the internet has become the commerce of the planet.
Very true.
Absolutely.
Monkey fucking around with, excuse my language here.
You can buy stuff from Europe, from Russia, from anywhere, from the confines of your own basement.
Well, yes, and you can buy from the grocery down the street and have it delivered.
There.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, I do. I go once a month. I'll get it.
Well, you know what? You're saving your own self gas and pollution in the air and all that stuff. and let them have one vehicle that goes to different spots and delivers the goods. And
you would have one vehicle maybe delivering 30 orders of groceries instead of having 30 vehicles going to the one store.
Absolutely.
And ordering it.
That's the thing about this grocery is that, you know, that you may order it on Tuesday, but it might not be delivered till Wednesday evening because they wait to deliver until
You sacrifice a few hours, but you do great things by doing so, and it's great. And you save money, hopefully, or even if you spend a little bit more, it's worth it in what you've saved your community in terms of pollution and traffic and all
kinds of
things.
Traffic snarling, sure.
Yeah, actually, I don't think I've spent more over the top than what I go in to buy from them there. I'm just paying maybe $3 extra to have them drop it off.
Well, that's great.
Pick it up off of the shelves, of course.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, that's nothing compared to it. But my point of fact is that the commerce majority, and I'd say at least half of the retail sales in the planet right now are over the internet. I might be wrong. It might be more.
Oh, I'm not sure if it's that. Well, yeah, that's interesting. I'd like to find out what the actual number is. So I know it's grown tremendously in this country, but I don't know about the rest of the world. I don't know.
Well, the thing is if you look at the internet now, you know, at the time when I was dealing in the telecom datacom industry in the late 1900s, early 2000s, Sweden, Switzerland, basically a lot of the European community was far ahead of us when it came to the internet. And the infrastructure that we had, so especially on cell phone, the whole technology of communication.
And in many cases, they have faster internet than we have.
Yes, right.
What now? They have. I missed that last one.
In many cases, European countries have faster internet than we have because they're not tainted by commercialism. They're not tainted nobody's standing in their way.
Well, the thing is with Europe, they went with one standard protocol. In this country, it's like, no, we're not going that way. We, you know, because we're the United States, we're the leaders. You know, it's like, no, you're not. You just went different than everybody else. Then, when it came to globalize, guess who was out of step with the rest of the world? Ta-da!
Exactly.
So we had to then make inverters and the converters from what the rest of the world was using, so our system could run on it, and then when we had to send it back out, we had to convert it back to theirs. So henceforth, it slowed our whole system down here simply because we were converting from one to the other and inverting it back to the original to go and send it back out.
Yeah, we're coming up on the end of the hour here, so I just wanted to maybe if I could summarize real quickly my belief that the tremendous victory for the left in Greece will spread like wildfire across the continent, and not only around the European continent, it'll spread throughout the rest of the world to a certain extent, because people are getting fed up with being pushed into austerity measures that only benefit the billionaires that own the big banks. And it's unfair to the regular population. It stifles their growth economically, culturally, spiritually, any which way you look at it. It's a bad scene. So hats off to the people of Greece, and let's keep it going, guys, and let's get it started here in America.
Let me interject now about the Keystone pipeline. Right now, because the price of oil has dropped, because Saudi Arabia is pumping everything they've got, Saudi Arabia can make a profit on their barrels of oil at $4 a barrel. They're making a profit. In this country, with our sweet crude that we're getting out of the Dakotas right now, we need $40 a barrel. Mm-hmm. Right now, 20,000 employees in the oil industry are being laid off in the Dakotas. Mm-hmm. And if you go with the frack shale, we need $60 a barrel to break even. And if it's the tar sands of Alberta, Canada, you need $80 a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when they stand up and say, we need this Keystone pipeline to create jobs and stuff,
It's a lie.
It's going to be at $80 an hour. There's not going to be any pay. And when we do build it, and if it fails, the onus is on the taxpayer.
You bet.
The companies that are building it get the profit. If it fails, the taxpayers picks up the deficit.
Yep.
That's the plan going down in Congress right now.
Yeah, drill, baby, drill is a very stupid philosophy, and it's got to end.
Right. So there you go. Go ahead, Gwen. Your turn.
Well, David, he interjected something that was really important here about the Internet. The Internet backbone is moving towards Google Fiber and eventually satellite. The whole world is going to have Internet thanks to Elon Musk and Google. He just got
big hand on Elon Musk. He is the Thomas Edison, the Nikola Tesla of our generation.
Yeah, very true. Good point.
He invents stuff, and then he gives the patents away, saying, "Here, world, go and prove yourself."
He just got $2 billion towards that goal, and his rocket program is going to deliver the satellites into orbit. So.
Cool.
I am a big fan of Elon Musk. I don't care. I think all in all, he's going to be a very philanthropic man, and he'll go down in history as the man who helped improve our life here on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
Once that happens, there isn't jack shit the service providers can do about it either. So
good.
That's a large positive. One thing we didn't talk about today that I wanted to talk about was actually the American Sniper movie and what is going on out there in the world about it. I don't care for it. I don't care for
it. No, I don't either. Let's cover that maybe in 2 weeks. Next week we'll be off because of the Super Bowl, I suppose, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I get you. Okay.
Well, we'll go in 2 weeks. It'll still be drawing. It'll still be hot. And,
yeah.
Okay. My only comment on it at this point is that I think people would be much better served if they went and saw Selma instead.
Well, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Good statement, Jack. Very good statement.
Yeah.
Go see Selma. Find out the history.
Down with the war porn, as David says. David, thank you for joining the conversation.
Yes, David.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, David.
And we are at the end of the show. We got like 2 minutes. So, Jack, why don't you tell folks where they can find you and what you have to tell the world?
Well, I haven't done anything lately. My computer's been down, but it's going to be up again. I've had other things pressing me, but it's the Saturday Afternoon Post. And I blog on there at least once a week when I'm up and running. And I will resume that by next week. I should be up and running again. So that's where I'm at. And Wayne?
The Minds and Times of F. Wayne Johnson. And it's about, touches on the political stuff, things that I have done politically, environmental battles that I have fought in the past. Henceforth, the times, and then basically my outlook and philosophy and epiphanies that I see in life. Henceforth, the word minds. So there you go, Gwen. Back to you.
Thank you, Ray. I want everybody to remember that we are sponsored by Roundtree 7. That's number7.com. And you'll find a lot of great information over there. We have some wonderful writers. There's been a couple of really great posts in this last week. Check it out. Also, great movie out there that people ought to run to see, and that's the Alan Turing movie, The Imitation Game. Looks like it would be really worth seeing, and it's pretty true to form in the story. It's an important story. People ought to know about it. So there's that. And if you get a chance, check out daughtersofisis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestor. That's mine. And we will see you in 2 weeks.
Keep pushing forward.
Here on the Sunday show. We thank you for listening. And
thank you, Gwen.
That's our show for today. Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you, Gwen. Talk to you in 2 weeks.
I was going to say, how it going, Jack?
You bet, buddy. See you later.
okay to keep pushing.
I did.
Oh, you did?
Keep pushing forward.
Okay, keep pushing forward. Thank you for listening. Good night, everybody.
Thank you, Gwen. Good night.